This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Officials with the United States and Britain say at least three sailors were killed in a Houthi missile attack on a Red Sea merchant ship on Wednesday. Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber has more.
Yemen's Houthis claimed responsibility for the attack, with a military spokesperson confirming it in a televised address. The attack set the Greek-owned, Barbados-flagged ship, True Confidence, ablaze. These are the first fatalities reported since the Houthis began strikes against shipping in one of the world's busiest sea lanes in mid-November. They have said they are acting in solidarity with Palestinians to oppose Israel's military actions in Gaza. Britain and the United States have been launching retaliatory strikes against the Houthis, and the confirmation of fatalities could lead to pressure for stronger military action.
That was Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber. The United States Central Command issued a statement Thursday saying it conducted self-defense strikes against two unmanned aerial vehicles in a Houthi-controlled area of Yemen that presented an imminent threat to merchant vessels and U.S. Navy ships in the region. Talks on a ceasefire in Gaza and hostage exchange between Israel and Hamas remained at an impasse Wednesday as the humanitarian crisis in the enclave deepened. Negotiators from Hamas, Qatar, and Egypt were in Cairo trying to secure a 40-day ceasefire in the war between Israel and the Islamist group in time for the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan, which begins early next week. Israel did not send negotiators to the Cairo talks. Israeli forces, which began their offensive in Gaza after the deadly Hamas raid on Israel on October 7th, have continued bombarding the Palestinian enclave since the talks began in Cairo on Sunday. Join VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises as we delve into the heart of the world's most pressing global conflicts and crises, from the Israel-Hamas war to the Russia-Ukraine war. This is VOA News. The International Court of Justice says South Africa has asked the court to offer additional emergency measures against Israel, which it says is breaching the measures already in place. In its application to the UN-backed court, South Africa warned Palestinians in Gaza were facing starvation and asked the court to order all parties cease hostilities and release all hostages and detainees. In a statement issued Wednesday, the South African presidency warned the people of Gaza cannot wait. The United States said on Wednesday it was calling on Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry to expedite a political transition as armed gangs seek his ouster amid a collapse in security and a humanitarian crisis in the Caribbean nation. Henry, Haiti's unelected interim leader, has been in the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico since Tuesday, apparently unwilling or unable to return to his strife-torn country after traveling to Kenya to rally security backing. Here's State Department spokesman Matthew Miller.
We are not calling on him or pushing for him to resign, but we are urging him to expedite the transition to an empowered and inclusive governance structure that will move with urgency to help the country prepare for a multinational security support mission to address the security situation and pave the way for free and fair elections.
Miller also said the U.S. is not helping the prime minister return home. Lawmakers in the Republican-led U.S. House of Representatives have passed a series of spending bills worth $460 billion that will fund key federal agencies throughout the remainder of the budget year. Here's AP correspondent Ed Donahue.
The House has passed a package of spending bills that would avert a partial government shutdown by the end of the week. A significant number of Republicans lined up against these bills. Speaker Mike Johnson says he is being realistic.
We're not going to get everything that we want. We want to cut spending. We want to limit the size and scope of the federal government. The reality right now is we have divided government. We have a two-vote majority, one of the smallest in history.
Massachusetts Democrat Jim McGovern says Republicans aren't serious. To get anything done, there must be bipartisanship.
It has been our votes that have kept the lights on since September. We believe in governing. We believe that shutting the government down is a bad, terrible, awful idea.
Lawmakers are negotiating a second package of bills, including defense, that would have all federal agencies fully funded before a March 22nd deadline. Ed Donahue, Washington.
International Edition delivers insight into world news through eyewitnesses, correspondent reports, and analysis from experts and newsmakers. We also keep you in touch with social media, science, and entertainment trends. This VOA's International Edition. I'm Richard Green for VOA.
sailors die in a Houthi attack on a merchant ship in the Gulf of Aden.
There was a Houthi ballistic missile attack today that hit a bulk carrier ship, the True Confidence. The pilot house caught on fire. The ship had to be abandoned.
Nikki Haley drops out of the U.S. presidential race.
I am filled with the gratitude for the outpouring of support we've received from all across our great country. But the time has now come to suspend my campaign.
And legislation to ban access to TikTok in the United States.
TikTok, under its current ownership structure, is a threat to U.S. national security.
Today is Thursday, March 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Another Houthi missile attack on a Gulf of Aden merchant ship. But this time, three sailors die. Details now from Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber.
The attack set the Greek-owned, Barbados-flagged ship True Confidence ablaze around 50 nautical miles off the coast of Yemen's port of Aden. These are the first fatalities reported since the Houthis began strikes against shipping in one of the world's busiest sea lanes in mid-November. They have said they are acting in solidarity with Palestinians to oppose Israel's military actions in Gaza. Britain and the United States have been launching retaliatory strikes against the Houthis, and the confirmation of fatalities could lead to pressure for stronger military action. 4 days ago, a UK-owned bulk carrier became the first ship to sink as a result of a Houthi attack, after floating for 2 weeks with severe damage from a missile strike. All crew were safely evacuated. While the Houthis say they would attack vessels with links to the United Kingdom, the United States, and Israel, shipping industry sources say all ships could be at risk.
Reuters correspondent Rachel Faber. Let's get some context and go a little bit deeper on this. Joining us now to talk about it is VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. What do we know from the Department of Defense about this incident so far?
U.S. defense officials are telling me that there was a Houthi ballistic missile attack today that hit a bulk carrier ship, the True Confidence. And when it struck the ship, the pilot house caught on fire. The ship had to be abandoned. The crew had to abandon ship. At least three are either missing or presumed dead at this point. There are six injuries. At least four of those are critical. It's a very scary time, and things are still evolving.
They really hit the Houthis hard over the last, since they started attacking them. What's the sense of their ability to degrade them, given that they haven't been able to do so, it seems, so far?
Well, multiple senior leaders are saying that while they are confident that they are degrading the Houthi capabilities, they know that they're hitting what they're striking to success. They don't know the denominator. They don't know how much weaponry the Houthis have been able to build over the past several years. That is still unknown to the United States. So the way that they put it is they're doing what they can, and they feel confident that they are helping in protecting these ships as they sail across these international waterways. I actually posed this question to the Pentagon press secretary, Major General Pat Ryder, yesterday, and I asked him, I said, ships keep getting hit. Do you have enough resources in the Middle East to protect them? And his response, he didn't directly answer me, but he did say that the U.S. feels that it has enough in the region to protect. But he said if more is needed, that the U.S. isn't the only one that needs to step up here. There are allies that can commit crews and military weaponry and ships as well. And so I think that was a call to the international community to step up and help. But at that point, there had been more than a dozen ships that were hit, but no fatalities. This is very significant because now there are deaths related to these Houthi attacks. So they have significantly escalated the fight at this point.
And it seems, you're right, there were a lot of ships hit, but only in the last 4 days. You had the first ship sink 4 days ago, and now
That's a significant hit.
I guess, do you think, what's your take on that? Is it that they're getting better, or is it just eventually, if you hit enough ships, you are going to do this kind of damage?
Well, officials will also point to what role Iran can play in this. You know, you said, are they getting better? It's interesting to note that there was an Iranian spy ship out patrolling the waters of the Red Sea when the Houthis began hitting some of these ships. There was a cyber attack that VOA and a few others confirmed on this ship. The ship ended up docking and was kind of out of commission for several days. And now we've seen that ship back in the Red Sea. And lo and behold, there are the Houthis are connecting. You know, officials cannot directly confirm that, but there have been some that say that, yes, absolutely, Iran is providing them assistance with these strikes. It's clear that they've provided them the weapons, and they certainly have the capabilities to help them with their reconnaissance and surveillance as they target these ships as well. So that is something to be watching for in the next few days. Will the U.S. try to hit that Iranian ship again, or does the U.S. not want to escalate this further? Because that has been another major role and major goal for the United States, is to prevent what started in Israel when Hamas had that deadly terrorist attack against Israel, and then Israel responded with an invasion of Gaza to try to rid Gaza of Hamas. Once that started, the U.S. could see that this war could potentially spill across the Middle East, and they did not want that to happen. So while these Iranian proxies were attacking U.S. forces in Iraq, Syria, and Jordan, and while they were attacking, while the Houthi militants, which are also Iranian-backed, while they were targeting the ships in the Red Sea, the U.S. was just consistently pushing back, but not trying very hard not to escalate.
VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. South Africa has asked the International Court of Justice to order additional emergency measures against Israel. South Africa told the court that Israel is breaching the measures already in place. Israel and its Western allies described the allegation as baseless. We're also following these stories from around the world. The Dominican Republic said on Wednesday it has reinforced security at its shared border with Haiti after Haitian gang leader Jimmy Chérégia, known as Barbecue, warned of a civil war and genocide. Thousands of people marched through Colombia's biggest cities on Wednesday to protest political, economic, and social reforms backed by President Gustavo Petro. Petro, a leftist, was elected in 2022 on ambitious promises to fight poverty and inequality and end Colombia's 60 years of internal conflict, which has killed at least 450,000 people. A group protesting the disappearance of 43 students in Mexico in 2014 knocked down a door to the country's presidential palace Wednesday morning. Protesters rammed down the door using a white pickup from Mexico's state electrical company, while President Andrés Manuel López Obrador was giving his daily morning press conference inside. The White House says it looks forward to working with the new Indonesian administration, but stopped short of congratulating Prabowo Subianto on his apparent victory in Indonesia's presidential election last month. Prabowo, for his part, has vowed to continue a policy that allows Jakarta to reap Chinese investments while maintaining security ties with Washington. Here's White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wirakaswara with this report.
Immediately after the February 14 Indonesian election, Defense Minister Prabowo Subianto claimed victory. Official results have not yet been announced, but the leaders of several countries, including Australia and China, have congratulated him. VOA asked White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby why the administration has yet to extend theirs.
The president looks forward to early engagement with the new administration and to strengthening our cooperation under what is already a strategic partnership. We're obviously closely following the ongoing vote count, and we understand that, Minister Subianto has a significant lead. We've had excellent cooperation with him since the time he was defense minister, and you know, if he is in fact finally elected, then we look forward to continuing that relationship.
Prabowo has a long track record of alleged human rights violations, including the abduction and torture of activists during the 1998 ouster of his then father-in-law, former President Suharto, who ruled Indonesia for 32 years. Executive Director of Rights Group Imparsial, Gufron Mabruri, via Skype.
With this track record, Prabowo's election creates not only a bad precedent in the effort to prosecute state crimes committed by the previous government, but will also weaken enforcement of human rights in the future.
Prabowo's victory is attributed to the support of the popular outgoing President Joko Widodo, who awarded him with an honorary four-star general rank after his apparent election victory. The president's son, Gibran Rakabuming Raka, is Prabowo's running mate, fueling allegations of nepotism.
Is the administration concerned at all about democratic backsliding in Indonesia?
We never back away from our concerns about the need for human rights, civil rights, and all the values of democratic institutions, and the president absolutely will not shy away about expressing our concerns.
Until 2020, Prabowo was banned from entering the U.S. over alleged human rights violations, but he has since visited as defense minister, invited by both the Trump and Biden administrations. As the United States and China compete for regional influence, Prabowo aims to continue Indonesia's non-aligned foreign policy that has allowed Jakarta to reap massive investments from Beijing while maintaining security ties with Washington. Andrika Natalagawa, Associate Fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, via Zoom.
Given the continuities between the current Jokowi administration and what will become the Prabowo administration, you know, I imagine that at least here in Washington, there's a level of sort of ease with working with the new incoming administration.
There have been sporadic protests in Jakarta alleging election interference, but official results are expected to declare Prabowo Subianto as the country's next leader in the coming weeks. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Nikki Haley has suspended her presidential campaign.
I am filled with the gratitude for the outpouring of support we've received from all across our great country. But the time has now come to suspend my campaign. I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. And although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in.
Haley stopped short of endorsing former President Donald Trump on Wednesday and called on him to bring people in to the conservative cause.
In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us.
This leaves Trump as the last major candidate for the 2024 Republican nomination. Now, he will almost certainly face incumbent President Joe Biden in the general election in November. On Thursday evening, Biden will deliver the annual State of the Union address. It's a tradition that goes back to the first president, George Washington. In fact, it's actually written into the Constitution. But for Biden, running for re-election and under scrutiny because of his age, he's the oldest person ever to run for the presidency, the speech won't be so much about the state of the nation as it will be about the state of his physical and mental abilities. Here's VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell.
This election year State of the Union address gives President Joe Biden a one-hour spotlight for his re-election bid, letting him tout his work on issues voters care about, like the economy, immigration, reproductive rights, and aid to Ukraine and Israel, and, hovering over it all, the alternative if he loses. It's a tall order for any president, but Biden also faces opposition over something he cannot change. Chris Jackson is a vice president at pollster Ipsos.
The American public remains concerned about Biden's age, and that is, I think, a key challenge he will have to get past while making the case for his reelection.
The White House told VOA the president will focus on issues. John Kirby is White House National Security Communications Advisor.
He's very much looking forward to the opportunity to talk to the American people, to the Congress, and actually, quite frankly, the world
about all the incredible things that he has accomplished in these 3.5 years as president of the United States, from the economy to education to healthcare to employment, as well as on the world stage, and really restoring American leadership on the world stage.
Presidential analysts say Biden's words will center on policy, but the sizzle will come from his delivery and audience interactions. Jeremy Suri is a history professor at the University of Texas at Austin.
I think he relishes being in the well of the House and mixing it up with members of Congress. The highlight of his State of the Union experience has been the moments when Republicans have rudely challenged him during his speech, even heckling him. And he's responded with alacrity, humor, and irony, and quite a lot of efficacy.
Foreign policy analysts expect Biden to highlight the conflict in Gaza, noting that he's invited relatives of Americans taken hostage by Hamas to attend the speech. Marissa Kerma is the director of the Middle East program at the Wilson Center.
Previous State of the Unions have tilted a little bit more towards domestic issues. Of course, there's a domestic component to the foreign policy situation, particularly with the conflict in the Middle East. But this is definitely going to take up a lot of President Biden's focus, because that's what's on people's minds as well.
Pollsters say another man is on voters' minds as well. Jackson again.
For Biden, then, the key thing is showing that he can win the election against Trump. That's really the key thing he's going to have to show, even more than any sort of is he doing a good job with the economy or immigration or any of these other issues.
Biden gets his chance to answer that Thursday night. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
You can listen to live coverage of the State of the Union address right here on VOA, beginning at 0130 UTC. More than 350 delegates from governments, research institutions, and seed production companies are gathering in Kenya this week to address challenges in getting good quality seeds to African farmers. Experts say the lack of good seeds is hampering food production across the continent and contributing to the hunger crisis in many countries. Mohammed Youssef reports.
According to UN agencies, more than 280 million people in Africa are food insecure, with over a billion unable to afford healthy diets. One of the problems is that quality seeds are inaccessible to many African farmers, leading to higher rates of crop failure. Daniel Agan works with the African Seed Trade Association. He says the delegates meeting in Mombasa are trying to address some of the challenges.
We are talking about Africa, which currently is grappling with issues like fake seeds, counterfeit seeds. Some people call it counterfeit seeds. We are talking about plant health. How healthy are those certified seeds to be planted in whichever environment? And then we are also talking about movement of seeds. And that has been one of the greatest elephants in the room, in the sense that for seed to move from one country to another has been a very, very big issue.
In October 2022, Kenya approved the use of genetically modified organisms after a 10-year ban. However, the lifting of the ban has worried its neighbors, who are skeptical of the GMO seeds and products. Tanzania stated that it will monitor its border to prevent any such food from Kenya from entering the country. Charles Miller, a board member of the African Seeds Trade Association, says countries will benefit if they harmonize their policies so seeds could be shipped across borders with no issues.
We work together as an industry to lobby for that harmonization.
Another issue is a lack of seeds that can thrive in harsh conditions like drought. Justin Rokoto Arizona is the Secretary General of the association. He says there's not enough money to support researchers to produce more seeds that can overcome Africa's evolving climate pattern. For the time being, seed policies across much of Africa are stuck in the status quo. The regional bloc, COMESA, the common market of Eastern and Southern Africa, has introduced rules to harmonize the seeds trade, but only 7 out of 21 countries have ratified the regulation. Mohammed Youssef, VOA News, Nairobi.
And finally, TikTok is under the microscope globally for its ability to keep kids glued to its short-form video for hours and hours. Now, U.S. lawmakers are pushing for a law that, if passed, would ban access to the app unless TikTok's Chinese-owned parent company sells it. VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden says lawmakers are calling on TikTok users and investors to help make a sale possible.
The bipartisan group of lawmakers led by Republican Representative Mike Gallagher is pulling no punches, echoing warnings from U.S. intelligence officials.
TikTok, under its current ownership structure, is a threat to U.S. national security.
But Gallagher, who heads the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party, says there's a way for TikTok to go on.
If an entity other than a CCP-controlled entity owns TikTok, Americans can still share whatever content they like, no matter how bad the dance moves may be.
Democratic Representative Raja Krishnamurthy says TikTok fans can help make that happen.
We ask American users of TikTok to tell ByteDance to sell the platform. And this bill provides that way.
The legislation, which would apply to any app ultimately controlled by an adversarial government, is getting backing from the White House, which calls the bill a welcome step. Some right groups, though, warn it infringes on U.S. constitutional rights to free speech. China is also pushing back. In an email to VOA, a Chinese embassy spokesperson says TikTok is, quote, a private enterprise that complies with U.S. laws and regulations, adding Beijing will, quote, firmly safeguard the legitimate rights and interests of Chinese enterprises. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending your time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On March 8th, the global community comes together to celebrate International Women's Day. It is an opportunity to celebrate women's achievements throughout history and across nations, and to shine a light on issues that continue to hold women back, such as discriminatory gender norms, gender inequality, restrictions on reproductive rights, gender-based violence, and obstacles to women's full participation in society. Despite decades of progress in far too many places around the world, the rights of women and girls are still under attack, holding back entire communities, said President Joe Biden. We see it in Afghanistan, where the Taliban bars women and girls from attending school and pursuing employment. We see it in Iran, where the regime is brutally repressing the voices of women who are courageously standing up for their freedom. And in the face of Russia's vicious and unjust invasion of Ukraine, including the use of rape as a weapon of war, we see countless of women bravely fighting for the human rights and fundamental freedoms of all Ukrainians. Women have garnered a number of gains even over just the past 25 years. This includes progress on gender equality, political representation, maternal mortality, and legislative reform for ending violence against women. Yet in many countries, women still face serious obstacles to obtaining financial services, including banking and loans, inheriting property, starting a business, obtaining higher education, or jobs outside of the home. Too often, they are locked out of decision-making processes on matters that disproportionately affect them. Promoting opportunities for women and girls strengthens security, stability, and prosperity for everyone, said President Biden. And we know that we cannot solve any of the great global challenges of our time if half the population is left behind. So today, as we celebrate the accomplishments and contributions of women and girls around the world, we also reaffirm our commitment to ensuring that all people can reach their full potential. Women are one of a country's greatest untapped resources. Any society striving to flourish must begin by empowering its women and by promoting for them the same rights that men already enjoy. On International Women's Day, we recognize that women's rights are human rights. We celebrate women and we renew our commitment to make the world a place where women are not excluded or marginalized, but are honored, respected, and free to realize their full potential.
That was an editorial reflecting the